15, verses 1 to 6, which you'll be pleased is only like a page different. And then Genesis chapter 17, 1 to 8, which again is only another page. And then Hebrews chapter 11, which is quite a lot of pages, 8 to 12. It's a challenge for us. Yeah, correct, Bob. So you might want to keep some fingers in places, but we're going to hear the word of the Lord. So Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 to 4. It's page 13 if you haven't got it already. The Lord had said to Abram, "Leave your country, your people, and your father's household, and go to the land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all the peoples on earth will be blessed through you." So Abram left, as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he set out from Haran. And then continuing in chapter 15, which is on page 15. That's amazing, isn't it? There you go. After this, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision. "Do not be afraid, Abram. I am your shield, your very great reward." But Abram said, "O sovereign Lord, what can you give me since I remain childless? And the one who will inherit my estate, is Eliezer of Damascus." And Abram said, "You have given me no children, so a servant in my household will be my heir." Then the word of the Lord came to him, "This man will not be your heir, but a son coming from your own body will be your heir." He took him outside and said, "Look up at the heavens and count the stars. If needed, you can count them." Then he said to him, "So shall your offspring be." Abram believed the Lord, and he credited it to him as righteousness. And continuing at chapter 17, when Abram was 99 years old, the Lord appeared to him and said, "I am God Almighty. Walk before me and be blameless. I will confirm my covenant between me and you and will greatly increase your numbers." Abram fell face down, and God said to him, "As for me, this is my covenant with you. You will be the father of many nations. No longer will you be called Abram. Your name will be Abraham, for I have made you a father of many nations. I will make you very fruitful. I will make nations of you, and kings will come from you. I will establish my covenant as an everlasting covenant between me and you and your descendants after you for the generations to come, to be your God and the God of your descendants after you. The whole land of Canaan, where you are now an alien, I will give as an everlasting possession to you and your descendants after you, and I will be their God." And then, if you've got your fingers in it, Hebrews chapter 11, verses 8 to 12, which is page 1209 of the Church Bibles. By faith, Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he did not know where he was going. By faith, he made his home in the promised land like a stranger in a foreign country, who lived in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob, who were heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city with foundations, whose architect and builder is God. By faith, Abraham, even though he was past age and Sarah herself was barren, was enabled to become a father because he considered him faithful who had made the promise. And so from this one man, And he, as good as dead, came descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as countless as the sand on the seashore. God blessed us that reading from his word. I don't know how many of you have ever endured watching Waiting for Godot by Samuel Beckett. Noel Coward described Waiting for Godot as a play where nothing happens twice. He also said two things should have been cut, the second act and the child's throat. But that's rather cruel of him. It's an excruciating watch because it's just waiting. And it's really tough. It's just waiting. And Godo, as far as we know, never turns up. I've watched this play twice. Because I'm a man of commitment. Okay? It is... Beckett, it's post... It's almost like a post-apocalyptic world. It's nihilism. It's just miserable. I am certain it should be played for laughs, but it is just miserable because nothing happens and this hope is dangled before them, because when Godo turns up, it'll be okay. But Godo doesn't turn up. As far as we know, Vladimir and Estragon could still be stood by a tree in the middle of nowhere waiting for Godo, because nothing happens. They learn quite a bit about each other. It's quite an interesting play in that actually if you assess it, they learn quite a lot. And the next step really for them is that they don't need to wait for Godo. They could just leave. But they don't. In fact, by about page 6, one of the characters says, "Right, I'm leaving." And the stage direction says he stays exactly where he is. That's a kind of heightened waiting. They've been promised something from Godo, that he's going to come, that he's going to sort something out. And yet, he doesn't turn up. Abraham is in a similar situation. But the trouble is, we know how the story ends. And the Jews that were reading it knew how the story ended. Because he is their founding father, as it were, the father of many nations. They know all of the story. They're like, yeah! But imagine being Abram, who then becomes Abraham, starting in Genesis chapter 12. Imagine that. God gives you directions, not details. God says to them, "Go to the land, I will show you." Okay? I'd like you to leave everything behind, everything, and just get up and go. Now, I'm not sure Abraham is as good as we perhaps make him out to be, because if you read Genesis chapter 12, he takes all of these people with him. That doesn't exactly sound like going empty-handed. It's like this train of people with all of their possessions leave Haran. But they do walk quite a way. It's about 1,000 miles to Canaan. It's going to be it's not going to be a short trip to the shops. It's quite a long, long way. It's going to take them a few months, probably 3 months if they walked at a reasonable pace every day. But they're not going to do that. They've got sheep and stuff that they need to pasture. And the reason it's so long is because there's a desert between it, so they've got to go up and round. So that makes it kind of worse, but they've got to walk at the pace of the sheep, not the pace of the people. So it's probably taken them a while. And when you've walked that sort of distance, you kind of forgot where you came from, don't you? Because you can't imagine forgetting something, you know. Did we leave the gas on? You know, and we're 500 miles in. Don't worry about it, the entire place is gone. But he just goes. But think about that time. Where am I heading? God will show me when I get there. Oh, good. thanks. Now, yesterday I was following a sat-nav. If it had said to me, it's all right, I'll tell you when you turn up, I'm not so sure I'd have trusted the sat-nav particularly. I'd have gone, forget that, we're going to go by my instinct. I'll just follow some road signs. But go to the land I will show you. And so he does. When I was in Reading, we had several other fellowships that met in our building. We had a Ghanaian fellowship who were exceptionally loud. We had, I did a wedding once, and I was sat in a different room, and my body was physically shaking with the volume of it. But they were very good. They were wonderful. I loved my Ghanaian people. They also never turned up on time. It was fascinating. We had a joint service because Reading has a half marathon every year, and it runs straight past the church. So we couldn't have a service in the morning, so we would have a service in the afternoon when the fit people had finished doing what fit people do. We came and worshiped God. And so we said, well, actually, why don't we have a combined service? So, fine. Well, all of my people have turned up. And I've got, like, just the pastor. And I'm like, are you sure they've got the right date? Is anyone coming? He said, oh, it'll be fine. Just pray, but make the prayer long. Okay. So I'm stood there. I start off the service. And I'm like, I'm going to pray. And I prayed for about 3 or 4 minutes. By the time I opened my eyes, the place was full. It's amazing. I'm going to try that here. I'm going to shut my eyes, pray for 3 minutes, and see how many people we get through the door. And the pastor looked across me and went, fair enough. Anyway, we had this Tamil congregation who also worshipped there, and I preached at their first, at their opening service and stuff. But it was fascinating. A guy called Pastor Caesar. Pastor Caesar emailed me and he said, would we be able to meet in your church building? And I was like, yeah, let's have a conversation about that. I'm quite happy for that to happen, but let's have a conversation about that. And the first thing he said to me was, we were driving past, we were thinking about where to put a church, because actually there's quite a large Tamil population in Reading. And I was like, no idea, you tell me that, fine. Quite a large Tamil population in Reading. But we were driving along, and we're driving on the M4, and God said to me, that you need to go to Reading, you need to go to the center of Reading, there are my people there. And I was like, okay. But he said, I didn't know who to contact. And so I went alphabetically. And Abbey Baptist Church was the first one that came up. I said, well, there you go. And he said, but actually, you've welcomed us and you've given us everything that we need. God has gone before us and told us where we need to be. Imagine living by that much faith. That he started that journey on the M4, which, as we all know, can be a horrendous journey. But he started that journey on the M4 not knowing where God would send him, and yet God found him a place and said, this is the land I will show you. But that sense of waiting. And I said, how long had you been doing this? And he said, well, actually, we'd driven up and down the M4. Trying to think of where we might meet, and we'd done that for 6 months, and then we drove past Reading one day and God spoke to us, the land I will show you. But it's really tough to live in the you're going on the right path world, isn't it? Because let's face it, all of us want a destination. Some days. I think I could probably get in a car and drive and not care if I've had a particularly bad week. But We want a destination. Where am I going? Where am I heading? And it's really tough to live in the, yeah, it's okay, you're going the right way. Trust me. I don't want to trust you. I want to just know that it's going to be okay. How many of us want to know it's going to be okay when we set out on a venture? Those of you who don't, well, good luck for you. But actually, I want to know it's going to be okay. Yeah, when we took the risk and started the brigade, it was like, someone said to me, how do we know it's going to work? I said, I've got no idea. I reckon it might, but I don't know. But if we're not prepared to follow where God calls us, where we think God is calling us, then how do we ever think we're going to do anything? Where are you calling me? Well, I don't know. Just trust me. I'll lead you where you need to go. And when you get there, you'll know. But that involves living by faith, not by sight, doesn't it? It involves saying, I believe you. Just guide me. When I started in ministry, this week I was doing ministerial recognition at Baptist House. And there was one particular lady who we were talking to, and one of the things that we were talking about in our deliberation was, did they show that they could do the job, as it were? And I said, well, they showed that they were prepared to try, because I've got absolutely no idea whether they could do the job, but I need an attitude more than I need a competence. I need to know that with the right training, yeah, I can equip them and skill them, but are they prepared to be, and here's where I'm going to get really poncy, a reflective practitioner? Okay? Are they prepared to be a reflective practitioner? Are they going to be in a situation and go, that didn't work? Maybe I'm going the wrong way. Maybe I need to hear the criticism. Maybe I need to ignore the criticism. You know, if you don't like the third hymn, well, life's hard. But if actually the way you've come across is really complicated and no one understands a word you're saying, I need to hear that criticism. And are you prepared to take that? And so actually that was really interesting. But I don't want the finished article. Because the one thing I can tell you about ministry and being a Christian, forget about whether it's a minister who wears a dog collar, the one thing I can tell you about being a Christian is that you are not finished until God says you're finished. It's not like marriage. You know, a man is not complete until he's married, and then he's finished. Notice none of the men giggled there because they were very scared. All of the women did. But the point is that we are constantly being formed. I'm a different person now than I was 10 years ago. I'm a different person now than I was 10 minutes ago. Because actually, through the experiences that we have, the way that God shapes us, he changes us. And he says, I'm going to work with you on that. But that's who we need to be. We need to be prepared to wait in the not knowing. Just knowing that we're being obedient and going where we believe God's calling us to go. Then the next thing that happens to Abram is he gets the promise. So he's had the call, and then he gets a promise. Years pass. He's 75. Did you notice that? He's 75 years old. And then he's 99 years old. That's a while, isn't it? Couple of years, let's say that. And nothing has changed. He doubts what's going on. He argues a little bit with God. The promise comes, but with a delay. that how can I be this great nation if we don't have kids? I hate to break it to you, God, but you can't grow a nation without offspring. And the guy who's currently going to inherit everything isn't actually my offspring. So how does this work? Now, I know you can do all things, God, but seriously, you know, working within your own rules, how do we get to this point? How are you going to enlarge my tent? How are you going to do all of those different things? How do we do it? And God takes him outside. He says, look, see the stars in the sky? That's how many descendants, and you probably can't even count them, that's how many descendants you're going to have. Kings will come from you, princes, leaders, all of this, nations will rise up from you. So he keeps trusting. Two chapters later, God makes another promise to him, and he's had to hold fast. And he holds him and he shapes him the entire time. What is credited to Abram as righteousness? The fact that he believed God. It is not the fact, because let's face it, some of his deeds are not brilliant. Passing off his wife as his sister, so it might go well with me. And then getting in trouble with Pharaoh, which he does twice, by the way. I just thought I'd throw that in. It's not like he learns his mistake from his mistake. He does it a second time. But he is it's credited to him as righteousness because he believes God. He believes that God will do what God says he will do. That's what we mean when we say, do you believe in God? Do you believe that when he says you will be a great nation, you will be a great nation? When he says you are forgiven, you are forgiven. When he says it is finished, it actually is finished and you don't need to do anything else. When he says you are worthy, you are worthy. When he says you are my prized, precious possession, you are the apple of my eye, guess what? He means it. Do you believe God when he tells you those things? Even though there will be times after he's told you that, that you will go, I don't feel it. I don't feel like you love me at the moment. I don't feel like I'm your precious possession because frankly, my life at the moment is rubbish. I have got so many things going wrong. What on earth, God? I always take great comfort in the words of Mark Lowry, who was he was an evangelist. He still is an evangelist in America. But I remember watching him deliver a sermon, and he was talking about what does Jesus promise to us? He promises life. Come on. Life in... No, yeah, but life in all its fullness. Brilliant. So life goes like this, doesn't it? Yeah. But no. God promises life in all its fullness. Much more like that. We get highs, we get lows, but how do you get through the low? Because of the high. Exactly. How would you know if you're on a high without if you didn't have a low? How do we do it? Because actually, God tells us these things so that we can cope. And even in the midst of the pain and the suffering, there is shaping and formation. In the first song that we sang, on that day when my strength is weary, I'll still sing. My time's come, but you know what? Still going to trust that you're the God who looks after me. That all of those promises that you made me, all of those promises that I've claimed for myself, all of those things where I've heard it and it's just hit me. That's how I get through. I'm a precious child of God. You know, there were those bracelets a few years ago with WWJD on them, which for years I couldn't work out what it meant. but there was also another one, and you can get these still in bookshops, only good Christian bookshops, obviously, with frog written on them, which is friend of God, essentially, isn't it? What? That would be me. But, well, no, see, the reason is, now this is where I'm going to sound really old, and only certain people will remember this because they would have had to have been doing Sunday school when I was a child. We actually had a thing from Scripture Union called Frog, and we were friends of God. So I thought, even then I don't know what it means. Don't put things in acronyms, tell people what they actually mean. But a friend of God, or fully reliant on God, still works. The point is that we need to, that's how we need to live. How do we get through? Unless we are. Because you can try it in your own strength, and it's very tiring. And in the midst of the pain and the suffering that each one of us goes through, in the midst of the struggle and the difficulty, God says, I'm still going to keep my promise, by the way. And what's the promise for each one of us? Because there is actually a promise that I can talk about. Not all of us are going to become a great nation. I couldn't, you know, I haven't got the time to organize a complete nation. Not all of us are going to become a great nation. Not all of us are going to become amazing preachers, as is evident. Not all of us are going to be, rich and famous. Not all of us are going to do the thing. Some of you might have a personal promise that God's going to say, I'm going to do this for you. That's brilliant for you. But there is one promise that runs across all of us, and that is that you are forgiven through Jesus Christ's death on the cross. You are set free by his resurrection. And that you will join him when he comes again in glory. And that you have nothing to fear. You might fear dying, but you don't fear death. Because actually death has lost its sting, as Paul writes. That we are forgiven. We are set free. We are his children. Here's a wonderful promise for you. You are an heir with Christ. That should have made at least one person smile. Thank you, Sue. But you are an heir with Christ. All of the riches. You're an heir with Christ. So next time you've got that little voice of doubt, or maybe it's not a little voice, maybe it's a really loud voice. If it's anything like my voice that I have in my head, it could be a really loud voice saying, you know, you're just not good enough. You're no good. You're useless. So I think every minister on the planet has imposter syndrome, where they're just waiting for someone to come along and say, you know, you're not cut out for this. And there are many ministers who are waiting for it just so they can go, I know, brilliant, and run as fast as they can in the opposite direction. But at the point where you hear that voice saying, yeah, as if you could do that, you're a child of God. You're part of his family. You're adopted into his family. You were worth dying for. How many of you can say you've got anyone else in your life that that actually would be prepared, well, might be prepared, that actually did die for you? Died so that you could live, and not just live life in all its fullness, live life so that you can get through, live life so that you can have more than they had, so that you don't have to suffer. Instead, you can explore and, you know, be amazed at the riches that are available to you. We have Jesus, who said you are worth dying for. Went out that local hymn writer that no one's ever heard of, Isaac Watts, Ever heard of him? It's interesting the number of people in Southampton who don't know who Isaac Watts is. I think that's fascinating. The fact there's a statue of him and the Guildhall plays When I Survey the Wondrous Cross, but they don't know what any of these things are. But when he wrote When I Survey the Wondrous Cross, he talks about the final verse, love so amazing, so divine, demands my life, my soul, my life, my all. My soul, my life, my all. That's what it is. And if we can learn anything from Abraham, is that there's promise and there's fulfillment. Does God keep his promise to Abraham? Yes. Abraham has two sons. That he is a great nation. From him, all these other nations are there, etc., etc. Does he keep his promise? Yes, absolutely. But there's a big gap between the promise and the fulfillment. And if we are going to understand our Christian walk, we have to live in the gap. And how do we get to live in the gap and be successful? It's to have faith. To choose to believe. I've said this on numerous occasions recently because it's just one of those things that keeps on popping around in my head. I would use Rachel as an example, but oh, she's awake. What? Oh, you are listening. Good, that'll be a test. But the point is, and maybe this is today, I have to choose to love Rachel. Love isn't all this mushy stuff. That's about 3 months. I have to choose to love Rachel, and Rachel has to choose to love me. Hey, love. But she has to choose to love me. I have to have faith in Rachel. And she has to have faith in me, because I don't choose to love Rachel based on nothing. I choose to love Rachel based on the promises that she made me. All of them, not just the ones in our wedding vows. I choose to love Rachel because she hasn't broken them. And so because I've got a relationship with her, I can say, do you know what? Even though she was a right so-and-so yesterday, she was amazing yesterday, but even though she was a right so-and-so yesterday, I'm going to choose to stay, and I'm going to choose to love her, and I'm going to choose to carry on. Because yesterday was a blip, not who she is. And in the same way, and this is probably harder for her than it is for me, she has to choose to forgive me when I embarrass her in sermons. She has to put up with me, but it's because she knows me and she has a relationship with me. So it's not like faith is something that we don't all have. Because here's another one. You choose to love your kids. You love them, that's like, you know, fine, you love them, but you choose to forgive them. You choose to let yesterday be yesterday. Why? Because you have hope for them. That's why I brought them out the front. So impressed with the kids yesterday. And I'm going to talk about mine, they're not in the room, so they won't get embarrassed. My kids were amazing yesterday. I saw real leadership from 3 of them. It was fantastic. They were, they took their responsibilities. They were just brilliant. They could see what needed to happen and they went on and did it. And that, as a parent, you're going, oh, brilliant. They get it. That's where all that hope that you've put into them, that choice that you've had to keep going, to not just give up, oh, it paid off. Then there was this morning. But the point is that that's what that relationship is, and that's the relationship that God has with us. God's looking at us as his children, and he's going, yeah, all right, they've messed up, but I'm going to keep going because I love them. Because I know they can be better than this. And the relationship we have with God is like that bridegroom and bride. If I'm going to choose to forgive because we've entered into this relationship, and you're going to keep your promises. And even when you break them, I'm not going to point out that you've broken them. I'm going to choose to go, okay, that was a bad day. If it becomes like several years worth of bad days, that's a different matter. But the point is, and I'm using this as an illustration before people start getting upset. The point is that actually it's about us making a choice. Faith is choice. Faith is not a gift in that respect. Faith is choice based on a relationship that is real, because God has never let us down. And he made us promises through Christ on the cross that it is finished, that we are precious, that we are forgiven, that we are new creations, and that we will reign with him forever in glory. And so in the midst of my misery, which I'm really good at because Eeyore is my spirit animal, but in the midst of my misery, I can hold on to, I have a God who loves me, and that I'm worth dying for. We're going to sing, and then we're going to have communion. I'm sorry, I whittled on a bit.